We must be filled with the Holy Spirit. It's not an optional commandment. It's absolutely necessary. Each of us needs our own personal Pentecost, the baptism of the Holy Spirit. We'll never be able to stand in the tribulation without it. And in the coming persecution, we must be ready to help each other, encourage each other. But we must not wait until the tribulation comes before starting. Many are fearful of the coming tribulation. They want to run. Well, I do too. When I think, after all my 80 years, including the horrible Nazi concentration camp, that I might have to go through the tribulation also, but then I read the Bible, and I'm glad. Because when I am weak, then God will make me strong. Though he slay me, said Job, yet will I trust him. For I know that to all who overcome, he shall give the crown of life. God has not appointed us to wrath. That is God's wrath, my friends. But the wrath of man, that's an entirely different picture. Prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight paths for your feet, my friends. Yeshua, Jesus the Christ, is coming soon. But before that, unfortunately, all hell is going to break out on this planet, and already is. Thanks for joining us. Become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Friends, if there's ever a time you come alongside and help us to get this message out, time is short. Pray, believe, and act.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and... well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Art Robinson, and I've known Art, oh, I suppose, for 20, 30 years. He used to be a professor at a major university here in California. He eventually left that because he and his wife, who was also a professor, didn't like the politics. They set up an institute for scientific research in Oregon, and they've been doing that for... I guess about a part of 20 years. They have, his wife did pass away, but he had 6 children. He had actually taught them with a program his wife had put together. That's the Robinson Home School curriculum we carry. Well, Art ran for Congress during the last congressional cycle, and when, of course, that cycle ended, three of his children were targeted. They were attending university up there in Oregon. 3 of his children had finished taking their training, had gotten their PhDs. The other 3 children were working, and they were targeted by the university in retaliation for the fact that Dr. Robinson had run against a very prominent politician, liberal politician up there. And there is no question this happened. How do we know? Well, I'm going to let Dr. Robinson tell you, because actually one of the staff advisors, in fact, the president of the Senate up there at the university, had actually academic Senate, had told Dr. Robinson that his children had been targeted in retaliation for the fact that he dared to challenge this congressman. Will you pick up the story, Art, please?
Well, yes. We know what happened. Professor Higginbotham warned us that it was going on. We could see it ourselves. The reason was done. There's very good reason to believe it was for political reasons. The children had excellent grades, excellent examination performance, good research projects. There was no reason for them to have the trouble they were having. So we see, and there's reasonable reason to believe that it was political. Now, someone's mind and know exactly where they do things. So,
Are you on a regular telephone? Or is your just voice is a little bit muffled?
Yes, I'm on a regular landline.
Okay, that's very good. Well, then we'll it probably come through fine. Well, anyway, of course. But what happened now? Your three children are working for their PhDs. Well, what is the school?
At Oregon State University.
All right. And this, they've all been doing very well. Your three of your children have graduated and got their PhDs, and the other three are working on PhDs?
Well, yeah, the first three, one of them has a PhD from Caltech. The other two have doctors in veterinary medicine from Iowa State. And the three at Oregon State have been studying for PhDs in nuclear engineering.
All right, so what sort of things did they do to make their lives miserable to prevent them from proceeding with their studies?
Well, it varied with the students, but the gist of it is in very long sort of detail that I couldn't describe all here. But in essence, students were one way or another, especially two. The third one is not quite the same, but two of them were gradually put into sort of bureaucratic positions that would lead to them not getting doctorates and treated in a different way than a student is normally treated.
But now, what about the president of the Senate there? Didn't he actually tell
yes,
you?
Yes, we could see that this was going on starting right after the election, but a very fine faculty member, Professor Jack Higginbotham, who's professor of nuclear engineering and president of the faculty senate, tried to help them behind the scenes, and then he warned us and told us what was going on. So the warned us, they went after him too.
All right, I'm going to ask if you would hang up. I'm going to have my fellow call you back again and just see if we get a better line here.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask Sydney and Ed if you'll call Dr. Robinson back again, and let's just see, maybe a better line sometimes makes a little difference. But Sydney, this is the sort of thing that does really happen. How do I know it happens? Well, I know my friend Anthony Sutton was a fellow up at the Hoover Institute. And he certainly actually had testified before the Republican presidential. It was actually the convention. It was a resolutions committee on the Republican convention in 1992 about how the American government was financing the Russians, who were financing the North Vietnamese, who were financing the Viet Cong, that were killing our boys in South Vietnam. And when Professor Sutton got back to his office there at the Hoover Institute, his name had been taken off the wall, his telephone had been disconnected, and he was actually confined to a small office in the basement for the rest of the time. His contract, and then after that, of course, he could never get a job within academia again. He was simply blacklisted by the various colleges, and he was never able to get another job in academia. And I saw the same thing happen to Philip Mosier, who was also at the Hoover Institute, had actually blown the whistle on the Chinese one-child policy, where the Chinese government allowed the murder of girl children, and along with that one-child policy. And I certainly know it, Professor Hobbs, who testified before the Reese Committee about what was going on in academia. And after he had testified before a congressional committee about the bias way that many people were treated within academia, if they didn't go along with the liberal agenda, he was called in and told he would never get a promotion. And actually, he was at the lowest level. I think he was an assistant professor. And he graduated 30 years later. He was still an assistant professor. He could never get a promotion. So basically, academia many times is not free and open. They talk about academic freedom, but sometimes this can be utilized against people, can't it, Art?
Yes, definitely. There's no question about that. Academia generally has a pretty closed-minded attitude toward those who have opinions different than the prevailing popular ones on the campus. We have that with the students too. You know, there are several things hypotheses.
Hold that thought right there. Well, we were just talking about academic freedom and Sydney, and Dr. Robinson was a professor. He knows how these things work, and certainly sometimes if you just are in science and you don't say anything, why you just do your work, why it's all right. But if you take a controversial position in opposition to the positions taken by the general thought, why you can be discriminated against. Is that one of the reasons you left the university system and went off on your own, your own scientific institute?
No. Paulie and I founded that institute because we wanted to be more free to conduct the scientific research we wanted to conduct. And it was not a question of the university in that case. It's a question of the fact that universities uniformly in the country now, the scientific research is funded by government. And government apparatchiks and bureaucrats generally decide what sorts of research you will do. And we wanted to do research on nutrition and preventive medicine, which was not popular with the bureaucrats in Washington. So we founded a separate institute so we could fund it separately with private donations and be free of government interference.
All right, fine. Of course, you've been at that for how long now since you left your university here in California?
Well, we founded that institute in 1973. That's when we both left academia.
All right, fine. Well, now, as far as your children are concerned, one of them certainly has built some sort of a gadget that is important as far as a nuclear energy is concerned, and actually he's built this, it's being used with a nuclear reactor, but he's not even allowed to look at it, and it's essential for him to complete his work as of his PhD. What's that story all about?
Yeah, well, that's remarkable. My son Joshua, as part of his graduate work, built a spectrometer that uses neutrons for analytical work, and neutrons, of course, are produced in a nuclear reactor. So this device would be built under the direction of his mentor, a professor that taught him and worked, you know, with whom he worked. It's a very fine machine. This spectrometer has been used by people in several major institutions, and he won an award for building it. Anyway, the machine, which he built with his own hands, is required for his doctoral work, and he needs it in order to complete his work. They just arbitrarily rule that he's not allowed to use his own machine.
Now, this is just, an act on the part of a few people in key positions at the university to target your children. And you were actually told this, of course, by the head of the Academic Senate. And even he has come under attack for daring to support your children. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. He's been attacked very severely, almost as bad or worse than they have, because he supported them. And this isn't the whole university, you understand. This is four faculty administrators who decided to behave in this way. Although what's unusual is that the ordinary disciplinary procedures of the university, which sort of call for higher bureaucrats in the university to make sure the lower ones behave, aren't working. The higher bureaucrats are permitting this, and so it's irresponsible. Well, more than irresponsible, it's bad behavior on the part of some low-level faculty bureaucrats, but it is endorsed by the higher bureaucrats, and therefore is allowed to continue.
And basically, do you think the fact that the university has gotten a fair amount of money because of the congressman you oppose and exposed during the campaign, do you think that this is partly responsible for what happens, or is this what you've been told was the reason for targeting your children?
Well, it's my opinion that the $27 million that they got from the Democrats, including the congressman I ran against last legislative session, is a part of the problem. This university tends to have faculty and administrators who are far on the other side of the political spectrum than myself, and it doesn't, of course, hurt the people that they support to be receiving a lot of our tax money at the hands of the congressman, especially the one that I oppose.
And you ran a pretty good race against him. What did you get? We got well over 40% of the vote, didn't you?
Yeah, we got 44% of the vote, and that was, we were unknown the first time we ever ran for office, so we're optimistic that in 2012 we can get over 50. We're going to work hard to try to do so.
Well, I certainly hope you will. Is it a strongly a Democrat district that you're running in?
It's a majority Democrat. It isn't overwhelming. We can win it. There are more Democrats than Republicans, but there are a large number of independents. So although there's somewhat of a registration disadvantage, it's not overwhelming. It's not unwinnable.
All right, fine. Well, I just hope and pray that you'll stick in there. I know it's very difficult when your children have been targeted. Now, of course, I talked to Dr. Robinson, and I said, why don't you just go ahead and bring a lawsuit? You could probably win it, especially when you've got the president of the Academic Senate, who actually will certainly testify that this is a matter of retribution, targeting your children because of what you've done. And I was very interested in your response, and certainly you do not want to have to get involved in a lawsuit, even though you might very well win a good deal of money a couple of years from now. But what was the rationale for not wanting to take legal action?
Well, if this is not corrected, I think there will be legal action. Dr. Higginbotham, the question of why people are doing things is a matter of opinion, but the question of what they did is quite clear. The legal action, which may be all that's left if this can't be, if they continue to do this, is not the cure-all one might think, because if the student professor are left alone, he can continue with his career and they can continue in the normal way to complete their education and go on about their career. A lawsuit, which they would surely win, in the winning sense, would take years, and perhaps they would be given some kind of monetary award. But they didn't go to the university to win a lawsuit. They went there to get an education. So the winning of a lawsuit will be sort of cold comfort compared to what they intended to do. Of course, if nothing else works, why, that probably will happen, but I'm hoping that things won't develop that way.
So basically, you have actually been talking about this, and has there been quite an outcry from the people up there in the state of Oregon and in that region against, of course, this autocratic and really gross discrimination and cruel action by these key people in the administration there at the university?
Yes, we fought this behind the scenes for over 3 months, and knew that we were failing, and that actions that were irreversible against the professor and the students were imminent. And so, that all having failed, I wrote an article that was published publicly about it. And the result of that and further publicity has been a very, very strong expression of support by thousands of people who have called, written, and et cetera, contacted the university in support of these three people, and a tremendously strong public response on their behalf has taken place. We're hopeful that that will help get the university's attention and get them to behave in an ethical way.
Well, good. Of course, what we'd really like would be, perhaps, at least I would like, would be for our listeners, and many of them, of course, are some of our listeners do live in Oregon, others live in the state of Washington, very close by there, but who would people write to if they wanted to, certainly record their outrage that this sort of retribution is taken against students trying to get an advanced degree in retribution against their father because he dared to run for political office?
Oh. Well, we have a website called OregonStateOutrage.com, OregonStateOutrage.com. That website gives email addresses and contact information, phone numbers, and so on for officials that would have an interest in hearing from you. Any contact with Oregon State or the Office of the President of the University is helpful. And if you go to OregonStateOutrage.com, quite a few different email and physical addresses and phone numbers are available.
That's OregonStateOutrage.com. OregonStateOutrage.com. And I can tell you personally, I've known Dr. Robinson for many, many years. He's a man of integrity. He's done a great deal of work, for the practice of medicine, for our country. He's a dedicated patriot. He deserves our support, and if we aren't willing to support our own, then who will? The people on the other side have said they can be very cruel and very petty, and this is a perfect example of it. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But here's something that you can do to help Dr. Robinson, but mainly his three children. Certainly all six children have done amazingly well, because they were all homeschooled. Dr. Robinson had to look after them after his wife passed away. But they used the Robinson homeschool curriculum, and many of them, once they got in college, did exceptionally well. Why? Because they were homeschooled, because they used a program that gave them a sense of values and gave them the fundamentals of an education that, tragically, is being withheld from so many of our children going to public schools. So, if you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, does this sort of thing happen? You bet it could happen. In fact, we've seen all sorts of retribution against people doing talk radio, people, of course, who run for political office, people who take a stand in this great battle that is being waged today for the very survival of our society. Are you concerned? Well, give us a call if you have any thoughts or questions right here at Radio Liberty. Well, I do think that they're feeling some of the heat up there at the university.
Well, they're feeling plenty of heat. The question is whether they'll be smart enough to take action as a result of the heat.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Because, of course, these people are using their position as public employees to discriminate against Dr. Robinson's children. And, of course, he knows this because the president of the state of the Academic Senate has told him this. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 426, anyway, right here in the Central Coast of California. And let's go to Ron calling from Eastern Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Dr. Robinson, have you talked to Mr. Beaver Nation himself, Terry Baker?
No.
Well, who is Terry Baker, Ron?
Well, Terry Baker won the Heisman Trophy.
I see. And see. So what does that have to do?
Well, what does it have to do? I think maybe he could rally a bunch of Oregon State alumni against what they're doing to the Robinsons,
yeah,
against people in the administration.
No, quite a few alumni are working on behalf of the doctor, the professor, and the students. So there is a strong response by the alumni in trying.
I'd be
to
outraged. I'd be just. I didn't graduate from the Oregon State University. I live up in the Pacific Northwest now. I would be absolutely outraged at what they've done to the reputation of my university.
Well, I think the thing is that, of course, if people just say, well, we're not going to give any more money to the university, universities, even state universities, are at least in part, you know, reliant upon the gifts from the alumni, and that would be probably an excellent thought, Ron. I appreciate that. Anything else you'd like to suggest?
Well, I just want to encourage them. Keep fighting the good fight. They're taking it out on your kids. To me, that's absolutely the lowest form of
that's about as low as you can get.
Well, yeah, you can't get any lower about dirty fighting than that, than taking it out on somebody's kids. That's despicable.
Well, I've probably talked to them. I've called up there many times. I think I've talked to most of the children there through the years, and because they worked very, very closely with their dad with the homeschool program there. Okay, Ron, well, I appreciate it. I think it's a great response, and let's just hope that people will go up there to and get to the webpage. Once again, Dr. Robinson, what is the home webpage?
OregonStateOutrage.com.
OregonStateOutrage.com. Anything else you want to say before we let you go, Ron?
No, sir. I just really commend Dr. Robinson and his kids for their courage.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Robinson has been on the front lines of lots of battles. I've known him for a long period of time. But he's a great patriot, and we need to stand behind him. This is why I'm putting out all of our programs. I want people, hopefully, they will get involved. Now, he can't ask them to be involved, but I can ask them to be involved. OregonStateOutrage.com. God bless. Thanks very much for calling, Ron.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, Cynthia, this is an important issue because basically, this is the sort of thing that does go on in America, but ordinarily you never hear about it. Well, fortunately, Dr. Robinson has a website, Dr. Robinson has a lot of friends across America who are hopefully going to stand with him and help to get the information out. And certainly members of the state legislature should realize they're going to have to actually come up with the money to pay for this. People at the university have to realize they're going to maybe incur the wrath of the legislators who are already under tremendous pressure because of the financial restraints that certainly they're feeling all across the country as far as funding of public education. So I would think that this would be an ideal time for, you know, for people to be contacting the state legislature. I would think that the members of the state legislature would feel very strongly about the embarrassment this thing would be and about the possible massive loss of money that could be involved. I mean, the careers of three young children, compensate them for ruining their lives, I would think they would find a great deal of sympathy with the juries.
Yeah, well, there is, you know, in many ways across our country, the taxpayers are being treated in an unjust way, and their money spent to hire and facilitate people who do things that are against the interests of the American people. This is just one small thing. There are many, and we have to fight them wherever we see them.
We have to at least point it, ladies and gentlemen. Basically, if we don't stand, you know, with our friends when they're in trouble, why? Who is going to stand when we get into trouble? This is why I hope that you will go to that website, OregonStateOutrage.com, and start putting in emails and start putting in telephone calls. Do everything you can to help Art Robinson. He's an old friend. He's been a loyal American, and, well, I hope he just comes back and runs for Congress next time and really whips that fellow.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Dr. Art Robinson, Art, it's OregonStateOutrage.com. Is there anything else you'd like to say, that any other points you'd like to make before I let you go?
Well, thank you very much for having me on, and I appreciate any calls or contacts that are made with the universities on behalf of the students. It's a great help to us. We're all in this, you know. We ran for Congress, had the help of thousands, tens of thousands of people just like us. The American people are rising up, not just against things like this at the university, but against all across the country in support of freedom and liberty and justice and against tyranny. And this movement is growing stronger and stronger and stronger. In 2010, we took back part of our government. I think in a couple of more election cycles, we will be returning to the principles of our constitutional republic. We all need to work on this project and on this return to liberty in America in any way we can. Our family tries to do a little bit in our place, in our way, and the tens of millions of Americans are working in their way to return America to constitutional government and to the principles of freedom and liberty. So we all have to work in our own way, and it's a privilege to be among so many fine people that are doing so.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing. I've run for Congress a couple of times. I don't think that's what I'm supposed to do. I think I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing and simply giving people like you a voice and certainly encouraging you. And when you run for Congress again, why, we'll be there. We'll be contributing to your campaign, and we'll certainly be getting you on the air as much as we can, because we do have a lot of listeners up there in Oregon. Anyway, God bless your heart. Thanks
you
very much, and thanks for everything you've done for America.
You. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye. God bless. Bye. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to do open lines at the rest of this time. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And we'll talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. We can talk about what's going on over in Libya. We can talk about what's going on in Japan. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of disinformation being put out about the extent of the nuclear leaks over there. And you can read all these conflicting reports, you know, about, oh my goodness, you know, 3 or 4 thousand times increase in the seawater that's underneath the reactors over there, or in the water adjacent to the reactors. But how much of this is true? First of all, we had people calling my programs today talking about the fact that I think it was 3,000 or 300 times the acceptable level of radiation on the East Coast of the United States. And quoting all sorts of websites, and at least I went up on one of the websites and didn't verify that at all. Here in California, there's been no significant increase in radiation. They may, you know, get some little hint of it, but remember, we can measure one part per billion, or with the sensitive measurements we have. Well, we've not had any significant increase in radiation here in the United States. And certainly, if you have potassium iodate, do not take it. Now, you should have potassium iodate on hand. And I'll tell you why. Because we could very well have a nuclear attack here in America, a dirty bomb. We could very well be letting ourselves open for a nuclear war. After all, we're toppling, and of course by we, I mean of course the Bank of England and the American CIA and the other intelligence secret organizations working with the Brotherhood of Darkness that controls our government and controls the British government, having nothing to do with our legitimate government. Our legitimate government isn't over there toppling Egypt and Tunisia and Libya and Turkey and Lebanon. But we have an invisible government that is, because they want to actually create a new Islamic world empire. And that's, of course, why there's trouble in Jordan. That's why there's trouble in Syria. That's why there's trouble in Bahrain and in Yemen and Somalia and in Saudi Arabia and Algeria and Morocco. But all these other countries have already fallen, and I can assure you that when the new government is installed, they will be identified with the Muslim Brotherhood, which, of course, has been funded by the American intelligence and the British intelligence going back to 1928. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book Devil's Game. Devil's Game. It was a very, very well-written book. The assumption is, and it gives you the whole history, the background of the radical Islamic movement, the assumption is we created a Frankenstein, but it turned against us. I don't think it's ever turned against us. I think it's doing exactly what it's supposed to. And I would simply ask you, ladies and gentlemen, suppose that we're up against these very, very clever Islamic terrorists. I mean, they're so clever. They were able, 19 of them were able to come into the United States unknown to our intelligence agencies. And we had a carefully coordinated campaign using as weapons box cutter knives. Were able to commandeer four airplanes and crash two of them into the Twin Towers and take down three buildings. I'm not quite sure how you can crash two planes into two buildings and take down the third building, but they want us to believe that and then have this one plane crash into the Pentagon so rapidly that there was just no wreckage at all. If you haven't actually seen that interview Jesse Ventura did with a woman who was actually in the Pentagon and actually came out through the hole made by whatever hit the Pentagon. And she says that there was no wreckage there. She was in that space where supposedly the plane went. There was no wreckage. As soon as she got to the hospital, there were the fellows with the dark glasses and the overcoats telling her she saw wreckage. She said, "We didn't." "Yes, you saw wreckage there. You saw wreckage." And they've told her many times, "You saw wreckage." They've threatened her life for saying that there was no wreckage in the Pentagon. And when you actually hear her interview with Jesse Ventura, she will tell you she fears for her life. Why does she fear for her life? Because she was at the Pentagon. She came out to the hole where in the side of the Pentagon, and there was nothing there. Oh, it just vaporized. The plane hit so rapidly, it just vaporized. The motors vaporized. The tail vaporized. The wings, 200 feet wide, 150 feet wide. They all vaporized, and everything, and the people, and the bodies, and everything, and the seats, everything vaporized, and do you really believe that? Well, I sure don't. But ladies and gentlemen, they're lying to us. They killed those people. They killed almost 3,000 Americans that day. Almost 1,000 or over 1,000 bodies have never been recovered. They were simply vaporized that day. The same way they vaporized the cement. You saw it. Those were the clouds that were up there, surrounding the building as it collapsed. And the tops of the buildings that were supposedly the driving force, driving the collapse, they were vaporized too. Look, you can go up on the internet and watch, there's lots of pictures of the buildings coming down, and realize that the tops of the buildings just disappeared. How could the tops of the buildings disappear? Well, you only need to look at Building 7 come down, and realize that when you take a building down by controlled demolition, the first thing you do is you take out the central supports of the building so that the center of the roof collapses. And so it forms a V on the top of the roof. And then you take out the base of the building. Now you take out the center supports so that the center of the building collapses, and then the walls collapse inwards. Otherwise, they collapse outwards, they do damage. But you don't want that to happen. You don't want to damage the adjacent buildings. So you take out the central supports, the center of the roof goes into a V, then the base of the building disappears, and the building drops at the speed of gravity into its own shadow. And that's exactly what happened. And if you doubt that this was a controlled demolition, we have a four-tape set or four-CD set called why did the buildings come down? You'll hear me actually interviewing a gentleman who was there in charge of the cleanup the day after the buildings were there, and his remark was, I mean, his job was to clean up demolitions after buildings had been demolished, by certainly controlled demolition. And his remark was, I'm 99% sure that was a controlled demolition, building number 7. Why do we ever talk about building number 7? Why? Because the American people thought about that. They realized that the murderers are still there. The murderers have never been brought before the bar of justice. And in fact, I did a debate recently with a young man who had written a book, something about, about the stupid things people believe, and I've forgotten the exact title, but it was suggesting that there were this stupid man's guide to the New World Order, something to that effect, and in the course of our discussion, why the subject of what happened on September 11th came up, and Chris, he thought anybody who believed the buildings had been brought down by people other than the Islamic terrorists, anybody who questioned the official government story had to be some sort of a crackpot. And I said to him, well, maybe you could explain to me how it could be that 6 of the 19 hijackers are alive and well. Certainly the FBI claimed they had no idea who they were, they had no idea who the attack was coming, and yet the day after the attack, if you remember, they knew the names, they had the pictures of all of these people, and of course the day after the attack, they knew everything about the life history of every one of the 19 hijackers. And they all died that day, didn't they? And yes, the fellow said they died that day. Well, then why are 6 of them alive and well over in the Near East? And well, they were mistaken identity. I said, mistaken identity? Those were the identities that were put forward by the FBI. And the FBI said, these are the people. And they had their pictures, they had their histories, and 6 of them are alive and go up in the Internet. Don't take what I'm saying as gospel. Go up in the Internet and look it up. Just put your search engine, 6 of the 19 terrorists alive and well in the Near East, and you'll find that this is true. So if you can explain to me, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you want to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and if you can explain to me how these people died on September 11th, they all died, and then 6 of them came back to life, why, I will accept the fact that this was that happened just exactly like the government said. Well, I was debating with, really had no answer for any of these things. And when you begin to point the inconsistencies of what happened that day out, there was no response. And this really is what you have to learn how to do. You learn how to present, how do you present this situation? Talk to people about Building 7. Challenge them to look at Building 7 come down. You can actually see it at my website, radioliberty.com, and go to my website, and there's a link there to other videos around the web. I think that's the title of it. We have one on videos, but go to the other videos around the web. We posted a lot of the YouTubes and other things that I think were important, but if you go to the bottom of that page, very, very close to the bottom, it says Building Number 7 coming down. Watch Building 7 come down. I will have to admit that it took me a couple of years before I was willing to admit that somebody had killed all those Americans on September 11th, and those murderers were still on the loose. But after watching Building 7 come down repeatedly and seeing how the center of the building collapsed first and then the base of the building fell, you knew it was a controlled demolition. And if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, everything was a controlled demolition. I also suggest you go to Richard Gage's website, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Anyway, just type in Richard Gage, G-A-G-E. Go to his website and watch, of course, his video. And over 1,300 scientists, architects, and engineers have signed a petition saying, We want an independent evaluation of what happened that day because, of course, those buildings did not come down the way we've been told. In other words, we're not questioning the planes at the buildings, but that doesn't mean that caused the buildings to come down. You see, what they're doing is playing games with your mind. You see the planes at the building, then you see the buildings come down, and you assume the buildings came down because, of course, the planes at the buildings. And yet, of course, nothing could be further from the truth. So the fires in those buildings would not bring those planes down the way they did. Now, of course, they found thermite in the dust from all over the city. Thermite, of course, is a military type of explosive that will actually take down buildings. It'll cut through steel. Why don't we read about that in the New York Times or the Denver Post or the Los Angeles Times or the Wall Street Journal? Why the Wall Street Journal, supposedly the center of conservatism, is all controlled by members of the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's known right now by Rupert Murdoch, who's a member of the CFR, and certainly, in my estimation, an integral part of this whole movement to bring about the one world government, the one world religion, under the one world ruler. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I want to simply just mention in passing that we are going to have a new writer for my newsletter. I've got getting to a point where there's just so many things to do, and fundraising, and certainly doing 5 hours of talk radio a day. It's become too much of a burden to have to do my newsletter every month. So I've engaged a gentleman I feel is certainly one of the finest writers in the entire nation, a man who was formerly the chief editorial writer for the New American Magazine. Our regular guest on Friday evenings, William Gregg, and he's going to be doing our newsletters from now on. We may have a couple of comments, but he's written a wonderful newsletter on the background of what's going on in Libya. Information that really, I think, will help you to understand that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. Well, anyway, of course, I think you'll really enjoy the newsletters as William writes them, and I feel privileged. It'll give me time for a lot of other things that need to be done. And so I hope you'll be looking forward to getting our newsletter. Hope you want to subscribe to it here at Radio Liberty. You'll do it by simply going to our website at radioliberty.com, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.
Never had a chance.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Do you know what happens to a community that fluoridates its drinking water? Well, the incidence of Down syndrome and endocrine dysfunction, heart disease, thyroid disease, hip fracture, mental problems, infertility, cancer, and crime increases. And if you doubt that, why, go to fluoridealert.org, fluoridealert.org, or the website of the scientists who work for the EPA. That's NTEU280.org. That's NTEU280.org. So what can you do to protect yourself? Well, we carry a Berkey water unit. It does a great job. If you have the fluoride filter, specifically taking fluoride out of the drinking water, but you're still going to get a lot of fluoride absorbed through your skin if you shower or bathe. So we have now a total home filtration unit. It's affordable. It does a great job. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Do not belong to the Radio Liberty family of supporters. I'd like to suggest that you give it serious consideration if you're positioned to join and to get the four best tapes of the month in the monthly newsletter. We'll appreciate it. I mean, many of the people who've been with us for many years are having real financial problems, and some people have been with us for 15 years, and I said they've lost their jobs, and we understand that. And so, but if you're out there and you are in a position to join, wire telephone numbers 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that you will read our book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It will give you an idea of the spiritual component of what's going on today. What's the answer? Well, we hope you go to our homepage. And there, certainly we have a number of banners, and we list a number of the people who do help Radio Liberty. But one of them is called The Story of Jesus. The Story of Jesus, it's the story of the life of our Savior, his virgin birth, his life, his death, his resurrection, and the impact he had on the world. And certainly it's the greatest story ever told. And it's certainly in the sort of form, which is very readable, and it takes simply follows Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But it's not preaching; it's just telling you this wonderful, wonderful story, which is the very foundation upon which the freedom of our country rests. Because, believe me, ladies and gentlemen, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. But when a nation rejects God, then you get into a situation like we are today. And believe me, America has rejected God. And there's no instance where a nation is turned against God where that nation has survived. There's another link on our page. It's simply, are you saved? Or how do you know you're saved? We hope you go there as well. And certainly that's David Bay's website. And you're going to have to help us get the word out, because I believe at this time this nation does not have a great revival, then we're going to lose America. And I'm not certainly a great evangelist, but I do believe with all my heart and soul that God does work in the affairs of men, and God does direct our lives, and he's chosen us each for a specific job at this time. And my job is not to run for political office. My job is to be on the radio 5 hours a day, pointing you towards the spiritual battle that's taking place, hoping that you'll read our book, Brotherhood of Darkness, Ted Flynn's wonderful book, The Hope of the Wicked. You will listen to my talks on The Forbidden Secret. and on The Dark Secret. They're available on DVD and certainly on CD. And that, of course, you get the information that you need through my ministry to understand what's going on. We've got a great, basically, there are two 4-CD sets on the Illuminati. Certainly put talks put forward by Dr. Cuddy to explain how the Illuminati was formed, where it came from, where the ideas for the Illuminati came from, and what its influence today, and how it's influencing the unfolding of events as we witness this. Does the Illuminati exist? If it does, it's in totally secret form. There's no way to identify it. But there are many other organizations that are carrying on the tradition. And let me suggest that there is no better source of information than the 2 4-CD sets on the Illuminati, because you can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. So basically, we hope that you go to our website, and then, of course, you'll tell others about Radio Liberty. If you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to welcome you. Otherwise, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection, because we really are involved in a spiritual battle. We're on the front lines of that battle, and please pray for my ministry, for Alex Jones, and for the others involved in this struggle. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who's formerly senior editor of the New American Magazine and now writes the blogs, and he's going to be writing the Radio Liberty newsletter for the time being. I'm going to certainly delegate that responsibility, and he gave me the first edition. It was great. William, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Dr. Stan, thank you. It's always a pleasure and a blessing to be with you.
Well, what are we going to be talking about this evening?
We have to talk about what's going on in Libya for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that in the course of this particular conflict, we're really seeing, in an unprecedented display of candor, the mechanism of presidential executive dictatorship being unveiled. This is something that is worthy of a great deal of remark and analysis. In broad outline, what's going on in Libya right now represents sort of a updated and revised edition of what happened in Serbia 11 years ago. As a matter of fact, it's almost exactly 11 years ago that the Clinton administration, at the behest of Hillary Clinton — this is some interesting continuity, I think — Hillary Clinton, of course, had no formal position in the Clinton administration. She was the first lady. She was the spouse of the president. But she and Madeleine Albright and a number of other Valkyrie-like, bloodthirsty women really promoted and pushed Bill Clinton's agenda in the Balkans and really, not, I don't know if manipulate is the right word, but they were certainly among the motive forces impelling Clinton in the direction of approving the U.S. involvement in the NATO-facilitated terror bombing of Serbia. For 78 days, NATO was bombing a country that had never harmed or threatened us in any way. It was a Christian population ruled by a socialist government. Milosevic had been the banker, the fellow who was the financial delegate of the Tito regime to Wall Street. And so he was somebody who had been sort of a glorified gopher before he was made the president of the Yugoslav Federation, then eventually the rump Yugoslav state, which is basically Serbia and Montenegro. And he'd served in this subaltern role for the power elite very well, and then in 1999 it was decided to be rid of him. And so he had this 78-day terror bombing of Yugoslavia, what remained of Yugoslavia at the time, Serbia and Montenegro, in order to tear away the province of Kosovo, which is historically more organically connected to Serbia than Texas is to the United States. At Kosovo Polje, the Field of Blackbirds, was the site of a number of battles between the Serbs and the Muslims going back hundreds and hundreds of years, where you have the Serb Christians trying to break free of Ottoman Muslim domination. And so there's a great deal of ancestral resonance for that particular portion of real estate. And yet you had this CIA-facilitated group called the Kosovo Liberation Army, which was the direct descendant of the Skanderbeg militias that had been organized by the SS during World War II, who were so bloodthirsty that even the SS were afraid of them. They were the people who were put together as the so-called freedom fighters for which NATO provided the Air Force.
And weren't they somehow related to Al-Qaeda?
Yes, they were. They had been receiving funding and training by way of Al-Qaeda, which was another CIA-created or facilitated operation, of course.
And because here in Kosovo, we were actually siding with Al-Qaeda, just exactly as going on today in Libya. Why, who's behind the rebels? Al-Qaeda. Well, I thought that they were the enemy. Aren't we fighting them over in Afghanistan? Aren't they the ones that took down the World Trade Center? You're not supposed to ask questions like that. Just, are you going to believe us? You're going to believe your lying eyes and your memory? Go right ahead, William. And we'll be back in just a moment here with William Grigg. William, you go right ahead.
You're entirely correct when you say that in Kosovo in 1999, the United States government and the NATO alliance were working in tandem with a group, the Kosovo Liberation Army, that was connected to Al-Qaeda. I'm convinced that Al-Qaeda has had no tangible, significant existence apart from the support it's received primarily from the CIA with the help of British intelligence from time to time. Al-Qaeda, of course, was a group that coalesced, to the extent that it is a group rather than just a brand name, out of the U.S.-facilitated jihad in Afghanistan, which began before the Soviet invasion. In the summer of 1979, you had Zbigniew Brzezinski induce Jimmy Carter to sign a presidential finding that brought about a insurgency in Kabul for the purpose of provoking the Soviet invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. And for the course of a decade, you had the CIA working through Pakistan's ISI intelligence agency, creating the spine of what is now called Al-Qaeda. And one of the tendrils of Al-Qaeda that wove its way through the Balkans was the so-called Kosovo Liberation Army. It was an Al-Qaeda affiliate in the sense that Osama bin Laden was involved in helping to train some of the cadres that attached themselves to this movement, which was headquartered primarily in Albania, that had received shelter and support from Enver Hoxha, the Stalinist dictator of Albania, probably the most insular regime apart from North Korea in the world before the death of that dictator in the early 1990s. Excuse me. But Kosovo, the so-called Kosovo Liberation Army, on one side was descended from the Skanderbeg militias, and on the other side it was descended from the secret police service in totalitarian communist Albania. They were nominally Muslim in terms of their forms and public pronouncements of piety. Their forms were Islamic, but the content of their ideology was totalitarian socialism, one variety or another, and the CIA was supporting them. And in 1999, for 78 days, the United States and the NATO alliance provided air support while the CIA was providing on-the-ground tactical help and material assistance to this terrorist group in an effort to tear away a province of Serbia that later on was decreed to be an independent nation, as independent as any nation is under United Nations supervision. But the UN basically put the Kosovo Liberation Army, this squalid pack of thugs, murderers, pimps, drug peddlers, and black market organ smugglers in charge of Kosovo. Well, you're seeing the same play being carried out now in northern Africa, in Libya, where you've got a group of probably no more than 1,000 people. That's one of the things I find really interesting about this so-called rebellion in Libya. It is all...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, because William was just pointing out that there are really not that very many rebels. Basically, the only reason they're able to be effective at all is because the CIA is there. They're not telling you that, but we have CIA operatives there that are directing the American attacks on the Libyan military forces. Now, certainly, Gaddafi doesn't have that large a military. He's hired a lot of mercenaries, however, and they bring the mercenaries in to fight for Gaddafi. But certainly the ragtag rebels really don't have much of any military force. I think they have 3 tanks and 2 of them don't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have 1 helicopter. They have a small rowboat, a frigate. I mean, at least because Gaddafi has a couple of submarines. But basically, this whole revolution that you're hearing about is all orchestrated and primarily brought about by the CIA, which is providing, and we don't know how many special forces troops are there, but we do know that the CIA is actually there helping to guide, to target the bombing and the attacks on the Gaddafi's forces. What everybody's forgotten is we put Gaddafi in power some 40 years ago, and that is the most important, most significant thing. And during the intervening years, at least on at least one occasion, why the Libyan military wanted to overthrow Gaddafi, they made the mistake of letting the Americans know what was going on. They were betrayed to Gaddafi. The army officers were arrested and tortured and killed, exactly as we did, and we can document this. And in Iraq, there's a wonderful book we carry called See No Evil, written by Mr. Byrd, who was a CIA agent in Iraq all during the 1990s, and he will tell you he never met an Iraqi who didn't believe that the U.S. was keeping Saddam in power. And there were 2 instances he talks about in his book, See No Evil, which you can get from us, where the Iraqi military wanted to overthrow Saddam. And in both instances, they were betrayed by the American State Department. The officers were arrested, tortured to death along with their families, thanks to the American State Department that wanted to keep Saddam in power, almost as if this whole thing is on some sort of a timetable, then the timetable to topple Saddam, and then of course now we've seen Turkey move into the other camp, we've seen Lebanon move into the other camp, thirdly we've toppled Egypt, we've toppled Tunisia, we're in the process of toppling Gaddafi, and you pick the story, William.
I think that you're very perceptive in drawing parallels between the betrayal of the would-be independence movement in the Libyan military that wanted to depose Gaddafi and what happened in Iraq back in 1993, 1994, 1995. There were several instances where the CIA made a point of helping the regime in Baghdad crack down on this domestic opposition to the point at one point in 1995, literally cattle-penning every significant element of the would-be resistance in the northern part of the country and making it a proverbial turkey shoot for Saddam to use elements of the military loyal to him to crush that movement. That's, of course, built on the model of the betrayal of the Hungarian freedom fighters back in 1956, which gave birth, as I mentioned before, to the expression Budapest rules. In other words, what happens is that from time to time the CIA will organize the internal opposition to one of its kennel-fed dictators in Eastern Europe or in Africa or Latin America or anywhere else, and then bring them to the surface so they can be mowed down. That's a term of art that's been used by critics of the CIA, the Budapest rules. You can refer to it as the Baghdad rules. You can refer to it as the Benghazi rules now in Libya. It's the same dynamic. What's happened here is that you have in the so-called rebellion against Gaddafi, the results of what's almost like a Hollywood-type casting call, where people went around and chummed the waters, so to speak, with money, and it's really interesting to think that they'd be able to do this, given the fact that we don't have any money to speak of. We're as broke as any human society's ever been. But the CIA, of course, was able to use whatever inducements it had at its disposal to put together a somewhat telegenic group of roughly 1,000 people. That's the account that was provided from Benghazi here in the New Yorker in the April 4th edition, which hasn't come out yet. The preview on the New Yorker website, on the scene reporting by John Lee Anderson, an article called "Who Are the Rebels?" talks about the fact that you've got a group of people from the coastal cities and towns of Libya, roughly 1,000 or so. He describes them as being a hardcore of fighters composed of what he calls the Shabab, young people whose protests in mid-February sparked the uprising. They range from street toughs to university students, many in computer science, engineering, and medicine. They have been joined by unemployed hipsters and middle-aged mechanics, merchants, and storekeepers. There is a contingent of workers for foreign companies, oil and maritime engineers, construction supervisors, translators. There are former soldiers, their gun stocks painted red, green, and black, the subtly ubiquitous colors of the pre-Gaddafi Libyan flag. And there are a few bearded religious men more disciplined than the others who appear intent on fighting at the dangerous tip of the advancing lines. It seems unlikely, however, that they represent Al-Qaeda. That isn't to say, of course, that there aren't Al-Qaeda cadres in this mix as well, and that's something you get to do later on in the article. I saw prayers being held on the front line at Ras Manaf, but most of the fighters did not attend. One zealous-looking fighter in Brega acknowledged that he was a jihadi, a veteran of the Iraq War. Once again, that's somebody who had been fighting American troops in Iraq. Libya supplied about 20% of the jihadists who gravitated toward Iraq to fight against American fighting men in roughly 2006 through 2007. And to the extent that there is leadership, intermediate-level leadership in the rebellion is composed of people who are veterans of combat against Americans in Iraq. That's another really good example of how these completely unconstitutional and strategically improvident ventures overseas like this end up training the next generation of people who are going to be causing problems for the United States. It's almost as if there's a twofer that's achieved here. On the one hand, you have a training ground in order to give future anti-American radicals some field practice in acquiring the skills that are necessary for that kind of operation. On the other hand, it's a training academy, a finishing school, for the people who are going to cause problems here domestically in the future. I've referred to this before, and this might strike people as uncharitable, but try and tell me if this is incorrect. I've referred to Iraq as the Timothy McVeigh finishing school, because so often we see people who end up insinuating themselves into domestic-controlled opposition groups, and terrorist groups run by the FBI, for the most part, are people who have experienced these completely unconstitutional foreign conflicts and entanglements. And on the other hand, you've got people who end up going into domestic law enforcement who've got the mindset of an occupying army, and that's something that's becoming a growing and increasing problem here in the United States. But here in the Libyan opposition, you've got a group of people who obviously don't have the means, or the experience, or the ability to take down a dictator like Gaddafi, who's well-entrenched. You're right, Dr. Stan, when you talk about the fact that he has an army that is not particularly impressive, but it's certainly more than sufficient for the purpose of domestic regimentation, which is all that these people really maintain an army to accomplish. They don't have armies for the purpose of self-defense, because none of these dictatorships that we're talking about have ever really been threatened by anybody, and not many of them are involved in cross-border incursions. Of course, you had the major incursion by Libya into Chad in the 1980s that proved to be a disaster for Tripoli, and the fellow who was the big hero of this very unwise and disastrous campaign has been living in the neighborhood of Langley, Virginia now for 20 years, and he's the guy, this guy who is overtly and obviously under the control of the CIA, who's been appointed the supposed patriotic hero of this purported uprising against Gaddafi in Libya. They literally had to transplant him from southern Virginia to some undisclosed location in the trackless wilds of the Libyan desert But this is just a really good illustration of the patent phoniness of what we're seeing here. It's not so much a war as it is a pageant. And that's an expression, of course, which can be heard and seen in this film, Wag the Dog. Some of your listeners might be familiar with that film. It came out about 1997, I think. And like so many other things that we see by way of satire, it is far closer to the truth than anything we're going to see in the straight news. Just by way of a brief summation of the plot of Wag the Dog, you had a Clintonian president who, owing to his undisciplined adolescent libido, found himself in trouble of the sort that might ruin his presidency, his re-election prospects. So in order to create a rally around the flag dynamic that would rehabilitate the president, turn him into a wartime president, hence a dear leader, and thereby expunge the taint of his moral misconduct, the administration hired a fellow by the name of Stanley Mott, played by Robert De Niro, who was a fixer, something of a Karl Rove type of a personality, or a Dick Morris type of a personality, more apt in terms of the Clinton connection there. And he hired a Hollywood producer whose name fails me right now.
Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, it's interesting. Until I saw that film, I suspected that Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman might be the same person. But after seeing them on screen together, I decided that they probably are separate personalities. But Dustin Hoffman was the Hollywood producer who was hired to put together a made-for-television pseudo-war. And he called it a pageant. And it was a war, interestingly enough, a non-war that would be staged in Albania. And so a few years later, when suddenly we found ourselves involved in a war that included Albania and Albanian radicals, Kosovo, I said, this is exactly what Wag the Dog was talking about 2 or 3 years ago. We're seeing the same thing now in Libya. It's Wag the Libyan Jackal that's going on right now. It's the same thing. It's as patently phony as that film or what happened in Kosovo in 1999.
But, of course, now the president has declared that America has to be involved in this. We've got, of course, to be involved because civilians are going to be killed, you know, and Gaddafi's killing civilians. Well, actually, of course, the rebels are rounding up people to Gaddafi supporters and killing them. I mean, people who are backing are killing civilians as well. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Craig. Go right ahead, William.
It's always interesting to me that people...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Special forces, or have been on the ground there for many weeks, certainly directing much of what's going on as far as the rebels now. Of course, the president says we don't have any troops there. He doesn't mention that our good friends over in Great Britain can have their special forces over there. You know, he says no American troops, but what about British troops? What about CIA? They're not troops, but everything suggests that the CIA is over there helping to direct the bombing. But you pick up the story. Well, you were talking about the atrocities committed by our good friends, the rebels, who were supporting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise anybody, or at least it shouldn't, that people who have been involved in the Al-Qaeda-sponsored jihad would be indiscriminate in the use of lethal force against people who are political rivals or people who are looked upon as infidels, kafirs, to use the expression that they favor. That shouldn't surprise us at all. And there obviously have to be people on the ground, both CIA and special forces, if you're going to have a bombing campaign. That was something we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Tomahawk missiles are very expensive, high-yield explosives that do require people on the ground to paint targets in order for them to be in any sense reliable. And so the fact that they've been using these tomahawks as promiscuously as they have, indicates there have been people on the ground, target scouting and spotting on behalf of the people who are letting fly with the tomahawk missiles. The same thing is, of course, true with bombing campaigns. And those bombing campaigns have already started to build up a death count, which is documentably higher than the body count that we can attribute to Gaddafi. And they've been talking in the subjunctive mood about what might happen if we didn't intervene. That's something that Obama has been saying, that there was a possibility that thousands could be killed in Benghazi or some of these other rebel strongholds. But this is something that hasn't happened yet. Now, in the case of Kosovo, we were fed a huge line in the sense that there were hundreds of thousands of people who had either been killed or were being rounded up for the purpose of killing them, that there were tens of thousands of civilian casualties in Kosovo, that the police and military forces of Slobodan Milosevic's government had been rounding up every male between the ages of 14 and 60 or some such and marking them for death, and that there were, at one point we were told that in Pristina, the capital there of Kosovo, in a soccer field, that there were hundreds of thousands of people who had been put into this soccer field, which is being converted into an open-air concentration camp, and that they were confronted with the prospect of being summarily executed or starved to death or exposed to the elements and die through attrition. I was able, actually, when this was going on, I was able to call people in Serbia and in Kosovo and talk with people who were on the ground as to what was going on in the soccer field in Pristina and verify that none of this was true. But we were being told that these things were ongoing, that in real time there was this huge, almost Nazi-caliber body count being run up by the Serbian forces, and this was being used to tune the atmosphere for the punitive bombing against a population that up until that time had been pro-American. Little-known fun facts about Yugoslavian history: the Tito regime was imposed on that country through the perfidy of U.S. and British intelligence. That's something Churchill bears a lot of responsibility for. But the Chetniks under Draža Mihailović were heroic in terms of rescuing American pilots during World War II and in tying down a lot of the Nazi and the Nazi-aligned militias in that part of the European theater. They had been very favorably inclined toward the United States in spite of the actions of our government, I should say the government ruling us. And even through the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s under Tito, Yugoslavia was much more receptive to the West, the United States and Great Britain, than much of the rest of the communist-dominated world. And when the bombing was taking place in 1999, on one occasion I was talking to a reporter from Belgrade, and I could hear things going off in the background as that city was under siege by American bombs and American missiles, and he at one point said, "I'm sorry, I'm enjoying our conversation, but I have to hang up because right now your military is bombing my city." Well, that's the sort of thing that prefigures what's happening right now. The biggest difference is they've really not even said that these body counts are being rolled up right now. They've said that these are things that might happen, and meanwhile, of course, NATO ordnance is going off and killing innocent civilians in the name of saving those innocent civilians. It's perfectly Orwellian.
Well, it really is, but the thing is that people cannot really challenge this. I mean, who could challenge a president who wants to save human lives, who wants to save, prevent civilian casualties, never mentioning that what we're doing and the way of bombing over there is going to lead to civilian casualties. People have to begin to think outside the box. They have to learn how to challenge what our leaders tell them. They have to learn how to think, because if we can't think, there's no way we can deal with all the disinformation that's coming.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful.
William, you go right ahead.
It's utterly perverse, but it is true that the actions of Barack Obama here, and of course when we talk about Barack Obama, we're talking about him as a figurehead, somebody who's manipulated from behind the scenes by people who wield real power. But the actions of Barack Obama are far more dictatorial than anything Muammar Gaddafi has done. And he's waging a campaign of state terrorism that is patently illegal and utterly unconstitutional, something he himself acknowledged. Back in 2007, he was interviewed by the Boston Globe. He was asked specific questions about the limitations the Constitution imposes on presidential war-making powers. And what he said, in so many words, is that it is utterly unconstitutional for a president to commit the United States to a foreign war without the approval of Congress, that the president does not have the authority to do this. He was referring, of course, to what had happened in previous occasions, not the least of which, of course, would have been the way that our country was manipulated into Iraq. And he was opposed to Iraq, at least in terms of the management of the war. He thought it was done in a very dumb fashion. That doesn't mean, of course, that his own conduct as president with respect to Iraq has been any better. Joe Biden went so far, as senator at the time, as to say that he would have sponsored an inquiry that would lead to the impeachment of George W. Bush for misleading the country into the war. It's an impeachable offense to take the country to war without a congressional declaration, particularly if this is done under false pretenses. Well, that complicates things right now, because Mr. Obama didn't even go through the perfunctory ritual of having Congress issue a resolution supporting his decision to take us to war before committing the country to war. And right now, Carl Levin, the Senate Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman, a senator from Michigan, Democrat, says that we ought to have a discussion now in Congress with the purpose of having Congress issue a resolution authorizing a military action that began 2 weeks ago. This is a perfect illustration, once again, of the trans-Orwellian nature of what's going on right now. They want to authorize, after the fact, a decision they had no role in to begin with. And to make this even worse, Hillary Clinton has said...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly, William is just talking about how Senator Levin, Carl Levin of Michigan, I believe it is has suggested that what we need is sort of a retrograde declaration of support for the president. In other words, the Senate, the Congress weren't asked about going to war, but what we ought to do is have some sort of resolution now saying that it's all right with what the president did a couple of weeks ago, committing America's armed forces to attacking a country that has never attacked America and is no threat to the United States, simply because, of course, there's an agenda here that, of course, Mr. Obama is carrying out. Well, before we go on, William, I want you to go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your information, and also how they can find your PayPal button, which I know helps to support you and your family.
Dr. Stan, thank you so much. My blog is called Pro Libertate, and it can be found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or your listeners can go to any search engine and type in Pro Libertate, and then my last name, Grigg, and the combination of those two search terms should yield my blog as one of the first results, if not at the very top of that list. I try to update it between 2 and 4 times a week, depending upon my schedule. And as you mentioned, Dr. Stan, at the end of every essay, I do have a PayPal button for those who have the means and interest in helping to support what I do. This is my chief means of supporting a large family with young children and a wonderful wife, and I do appreciate the fact that you have taken an interest in helping me reach out to people, and that many people have been very generous in responding. That's a huge blessing, and I really appreciate everything that you have done for me and my family, Dr. Stan, everything your listeners have done as well. I also post at lourockwell.com. Lou Rockwell is the president of the Ludwig von Mises Institute in Alabama, and it's the website that is probably the most heavily trafficked place on the Internet in terms of people reading commentary and news from the perspective of individualist free market principles. That is to say, people who believe in the real free market capitalism, not the corporatist capitalism that typifies our system now, where you have this unholy union between corporate power and fiat central banking and the warfare state. That's not free market capitalism by any stretch of the imagination. What we're talking about when we mention corporatism is something much more akin to fascism. It's a variant of socialism where government controls through regulation and subsidy and favorites certain elements, certain players within the economy. And that's very much the system under which we're living right now. Lou Rockwell and the Ludwig von Mises Institute circle promotes the idea of commerce and cooperation as a much superior alternative to cronyism and coercion. And they are sort of the voice of the Jeffersonian perspective with respect to the way that society should be run, now recognizing, of course, that Jefferson, like everybody else, had flaws. When he articulated a vision of liberty, it was much closer to what the ideal would be in terms of political system than some other elements in our founding capital, being notorious among that number. But LouRockwell.com has a news site and also has a blog, and I contribute to both of those sections of that website. I also, as you pointed out, am going to be writing the newsletter for Radio Liberty, and I'm very honored that you invited me to do that, and I really appreciate that because I value what you do tremendously. I think that your footprint is very large and your influence has been tremendously positive. And once again, Dr. Stan, I want to take this opportunity to express my gratitude on behalf of me and my family for everything you've done for us. It's been, once again, a huge blessing to us, for which we will always be grateful.
Well, I really appreciate everything you do, and certainly you have such a grasp of what's going on. I can't think of anybody else who really, of course, has the knowledge that you do and really parallels as closely in my thought as you do. So I'm really tickled that you're going to be writing our newsletter for us, and it'll be a big burden off of my shoulders. And Sydney, anyway, let's go on and discuss what's going on over there, because in Libya, because this is really a terrible, terrible thing. The president has no right to do what he's done. What is really so frightening is, where is the outcry from our so-called Republican leaders? And there is none. I mean, most of the Republicans are simply rallying behind the flag. This is not a matter of patriotism. This is how you destroy a great nation.
Yeah.
You destroy it financially. You get our boys killed. And whether we're going to commit troops over there, I hope and pray we don't. But the major thing is that wars destroy great nations. In fact, in the classic article written in Foreign Affairs magazine by Richard Haass, who's the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, and Roger Altman, it's November-December of 2010, Foreign Affairs magazine, they conclude the letter by talking about how certainly history tells us that countries that go from war to war to war eventually go bankrupt. That's exactly what's happening. They know what's happening, and they really do want to bankrupt our nation. But go right ahead.
Well, they're doing a splendid job of bankrupting our nation. We've never seen a society as consummately bankrupt, not only financially, but morally, as the United States has become. And that is the malign influence of perpetual war. It's not well understood. This is something I want to take just a second by way of a useful digression and explore. War is a revolutionary force. It is not a conservative force. There is nothing about war, even when you're talking about a war that is one of defense waged for the purpose of recovering freedom that has been taken from you. There's nothing about war that is a conservative or a constructive element in society. It's the destruction of property. It is the destruction of individual lives. It emancipates the worst elements of fallen human nature and catalyzes them in ways that are dangerous, that really require generations to overcome. And it by no means is insignificant that if you read in the Old Testament about why David wasn't permitted to build the sanctuary, the temple of Solomon in Jerusalem, he'd been a man of blood. That's something that is not very well understood by people who read and take seriously the Bible, is the fact that there is a record of wars, many of them necessary, but they're never a blessing. Even a necessary war is a curse, it's a judgment, it's a plague. And that's something that David understood, and he had a background that led him to understand that, unfortunately. But there are too many people in the conservative movement who seem to think that the same government against which they rail when it's regulating their workplaces and taxing them into penury and spreading the tentacles of bureaucracy in ways that suffocate individual initiative, that somehow that government is transmogrified into an agency of goodness and purity when it's involved in pure, unrefined killing. And for some reason, conservatives don't look upon the Pentagon. They don't look upon the apparatus of coercion, property destruction, and mass killing. They'll look upon that as big government. I don't understand that disconnect. The classic conservatives like Russell Kirk and Robert Nozick, and of course, if you take a look at Ron Paul and his forebears, going back to Robert Taft, Mr. Republican, they all understood that principle, which is why back in the 1940s, 1950s, the critics of FDR were also critics of the warfare state, the John T. Flynn's, the Frank Shadoro's, people of that type. Robert Welch, you should add to that list as well. There are people who understood that war was emancipated bureaucracy and pure, unrefined killing and destruction of property, and that there's nothing good or noble about it. It sometimes is necessary because we live in a fallen world to take up arms to defend your liberties. But if you're doing this on behalf of the government, almost without exception, with the narrowest of exceptions I can think of, and I can think of maybe one example, if you're doing this as a government enterprise, nothing good is going to happen by way of an enhancement of human liberty and human prosperity. And now you've got a situation where somebody whose roots are firmly in social Marxism, Mr. Obama, is being used by the corporatist elite that is steering the apparatus of government here in this country to wage a war that had no input from Congress in terms of committing the government to military action abroad. The Secretary of Defense is going to be resigning probably in the next couple of months. He's threatened to do so on a couple of occasions. I think Mr. Gates is going to be getting out probably before the end of the summer, maybe even sooner than that. He has said on the record, in the presence of Hillary Clinton, that Libya is not a strategically significant concern of the United States. And then he also went so far as to say that he would not support the introduction of American ground forces to Libya. Well, unfortunately, they're already there, a small number. There are a number of warships that are now off the coast of northern Africa preparing for action in Libya. There have been a number of major marine contingents called up for service in Libya. So obviously this is going to become a very major undertaking. And it's one in which Congress had played no role at all. Just by way of briefly recapping what happened in terms of getting us involved in the war, what happened is that a few weeks ago, a deal was struck with the Arab League, that is a coterie of 18 monarchies and dictatorships, to pass a resolution soliciting a no-fly zone establishment in Libya. And a no-fly zone, of course, is an act of war. If you're going to be interdicting air traffic, if you're going to be shooting down people in order to enforce a blockade in the skies, that's an act of war. Once you violated the airspace of a sovereign country for the purpose of imposing your will on that government, that's an act of war. And this followed, and this is something else we talked about, Dr. Stan, this followed Anderson Cooper's little drama in which he was talking to somebody who identified herself as a resident of Tripoli, talking by satellite telephone in real time with Anderson Cooper on CNN International, asking for the imposition of a no-fly zone. So she was reciting the talking points coming out of the neocon Babbitt Warren in Washington, D.C. You know, we need a no-fly zone to keep out the mercenaries that are coming here and killing people.
No, but I think it's so important that people understand this resolution passed by the Arab League was something we got. I don't know what we did. I suspect we twisted arms. I suspect we bribed them. We wanted a justification for going to war. And they got the Arab League to give us the resolution, not because they necessarily wanted to, but because we put pressure on the leaders of these countries. I suspect it was one of those things, sort of like a request from the mafia, a request that that you can't decline.
Exactly, make an offer you can't refuse. Well, in this case, the chief inducement, this is something Craig Murray, the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, who's one of my contemporary heroes, not because he's a paragon, he's the first to admit that he's not a paragon, but when he was in Uzbekistan, he saw the way that the CIA and the MI6 were working with the dictator of that former Soviet republic, a really wretched, filthy man named Islam Karimov, who's supposedly a practicing Muslim, but he's a retread communist. They were using this regime as part of the torture apparatus. This is a guy who literally put people in boiling oil. This is a place where people were literally boiled alive. And so Craig Murray spoke out against that, and as a result he got cashiered, and then the worldwide instrumentality of defamation and character assassination got to work trying to portray this guy as being mentally imbalanced and four or five different varieties of evil. It didn't work. But Craig Murray, once again, is somebody who retains contacts in all the relevant diplomatic circles, and he reported at the time that this resolution was being contemplated by the Arab League that a deal had been struck in which the Saudis would be permitted to send their mercenaries and elements of their security system into Bahrain in order to help put down an insurrection against the Sunni monarch who dominates a Shiite majority population. Of course, Bahrain is the headquarters of the Fifth Fleet for the United States military. And this was going on at the same time that other deals were taking place in order to get this resolution to solicit a no-fly zone, a NATO intervention, UN intervention, actually, Security Council intervention in Libya. And so on the strength of this extorted or bribe-purchased resolution from the Arab League, the United Nations Security Council, at a time when Congress was in recess, passed a resolution supposedly committing the United States to a war against Libya. And the resolution had language that permits the introduction of ground forces into Libya. That's an important part that is also being missed here, is that the resolution, in typically paraleptic fashion, if you look through the circumlocution, you can find language in that resolution that can be used to justify pretty much any type of military action in Libya, sanctified supposedly by the United Nations Security Council. This all took place when Congress was in recess. So we found ourselves as a country, at least the government of this country, committed to a war in Libya without any role being played by Congress at all. Now, this takes us back to something that I was going to mention earlier regarding Hillary Clinton. Just a few days ago, Brad Sherman, a Democratic representative from California, who said some interesting things in the past about the way the power is really exercised. He's the guy back in October 2008, he was talking about the threat of martial law being used to extort cooperation from the Congress to pass the TARP and other bailout measures in the October Revolution of 2008. He attended a classified hearing on Capitol Hill in which Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said in so many words that the Obama administration would not be bound by any congressional action intended to end or restrain or limit the war in Libya, including the 1973 War Powers Act, which from my perspective is an entirely spurious enactment because it's meant to place parchment limitations on the unconstitutional exercise of military force by a president. But even that would be seen by the Obama regime as an untoward and unacceptable restriction on the supposed plenipotentiary ability of the president to wage war on the strength of the United Nations Security Council resolution. So you're dealing here with a literal wartime dictatorship. When the president announces that he will not be limited by Congress in any way in carrying out a patently illegal war, you're dealing with a dictator. You're dealing with somebody who is of the same species as Gaddafi, but much more dangerous because the military he commands is much larger, much more powerful, and it's one that draws directly from the wealth and resources of the people of the United States. There's nothing that Gaddafi could do apart from occasional acts of terrorism that are most likely either fomented, facilitated, or passively permitted by our own intelligence community. There's very little he can do to harm Americans. But there's immense harm that's going to ensue as a result of what's going on in terms of the actions of the Obama administration and the government ruling us in Libya. And this is just the beginning of sorrows, I'm afraid.
I think it is true, because it was General Sherman who said, you know, war is brutality, war is cruelty. There's no way you can change that. War is hell. He was there. He saw it. He hated war, and even though he's a professional soldier, and he did a good job in what he did, and he hated himself for it. And I think that we bear responsibility, men and women, to become accomplices to the evils they failed to uphold, to oppose, and our government is involved in evil, evil deeds. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program. Fascinating information.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, once again. Thank you so much for the privilege of being with you.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
want.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Do you know what happens to a community that fluoridates its drinking water? Well, the incidence of Down syndrome and endocrine dysfunction, heart disease, thyroid disease, hip fracture, mental problems, infertility, cancer, and crime increases. And if you doubt that, why, go to fluoridealert.org, fluoridealert.org, or the website of the scientists who work for the EPA. That's NTEU280.org. That's NTEU280.org. So what can you do to protect yourself? Well, we carry a Berkey water gun. It does a great job. If you have the fluoride filter, specifically taking fluoride out of the drinking water, but you're still going to get a lot of fluoride absorbed through your skin if you shower or bathe. So we have now a total home filtration unit. It's affordable. It does a great job. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 to learn about the total home filtration unit.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is April 1st, 2011. Thank you so much for joining us today. Can a quarter of the year be gone? Wow. Amazing. So glad that you are joining us today, that you have an inquiring mind that says, I want to know this.